I feel like you do have much more entrepreneurs nowadays that feel like I have the ability, the technology is much more approachable. It doesn't need to cost me $300,000 of a company that will actually waste now 6 to 12 months to build me this type of a beast. Let's just roll with it.
Welcome to the AI Advantage, where modern leaders decode the future of tech. I'm Solomon Williams, founder of Solenox. So here, it's no noise, no hype every week. Sometimes it's just me, and sometimes it's the brightest minds in tech, breaking down what it really takes to grow smarter with AI and automation. Let's dive in.
Welcome to AI Advantage. I'm your host, Solomon Williams. We have a special guest in the building today. So Gilad Bashar, he's the CEO and founder of Moberse. So Gilad, thanks so much for coming. How's your day going, man?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. You know, from our previous conversation, you know, you really brought up a lot of good points just with creative agencies and with growth, specifically with AI. So I'm really excited to really dive into points and what Moberse is doing. So just start off with the audience who don't know much about Moberse. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, for sure. So Moberse is basically a digital transformation agency, growth agency, if you will. That helps companies to overachieve their growth goals. 5 main different service lines: strategy, creative, media, organic, and product, where we are building websites, apps, and marketing them around the world, basically helping our clients to achieve their goals. So that's in a very high level view. We did had the pleasure of working with some of the largest players in the world, like Google and Samsung and Microsoft and Fox and those type of very big lists that basically each of them has their own growth points, their own kind of challenges. With Uber, it was different than what it was with Robinhood and things like nature. And basically, we help to overachieve the goals of the different companies using all of the different services.
So, you know, with that, because I know you're the founder and CEO, like what sparked the idea with you? Because I know you guys were very mobile first from it. What sparked it to where you were saying, you know, this is what I wanted to accomplish? And then obviously, like you said, in like 2015, from what I looked at, you got acquired with Google. So walk us through all of that. Like what prompted, you know, you creating Moberse?
Sure. So in 2013, basically where we started as a mobile only shop. Like we said, like the app world is completely different than the digital world. And in order to promote an app successfully or promoting a mobile website, you need to look on completely different factors. Every single digital agency out there said it. Yes, sure, we can do that as well. It's part of digital. But we saw that it was kind of required a very different level of both skill sets, creativity, understanding the platform, and the tracking. Everything related with how to measure things was completely different, where it's like all those touch screens and like very different type of resolutions and things like nature. So we started there. And in 2015, basically, we, as you mentioned, like we basically got introduced to Google. They were coming into one of my lectures in Google campuses. I was lecturing back in the day on both Microsoft Accelerator and on Google campuses around the world to help entrepreneurs how to do that in a more effective way, and had crazy case studies about how to unlock growth on the App Store and Google Play Store and lots of those things. And one of the growth experts actually sat there and said, hey, you know what? We also have a few apps, like you might heard about them, Maps, YouTube, Prompt Search, Gmail, YouTube TV, YouTube Music, a lot of those things. And we also need help with the algorithm, like really understanding the algorithm of the App Store and A-B testing creative there effectively and how to actually be telling the story in a more compelling way. And they were very intrigued with the methodologies that we built around how to optimize the storefront. So we started with a very small test for 3 months, only 3 apps. And later on, it scaled to more than 30 of their products in 26 languages, working not with their Israeli folks and not just with the Dublin folks, but also the ones in San Francisco and Mountain View, and kind of really getting key stakeholders to help them to unleash the potential of each and every one of those products. And the way that it was kind of going with was that we started with a very small test showing them what we can do for a few of their products. Once they saw the KPI, once they actually saw the metrics, it's kind of, hey, we have here a good idea that could also be replicated to so many other products of ours. So it was a very happy success story.
No, and that's amazing, man, to really kind of how that even started through just with coming on. I'm sure that was a big scaling of that, of having to go through on Google. So, you know, I'm real curious on just how, when you've gotten with that partner with Google on scaling that, what were the biggest learnings you would kind of say from you and your team from that initial app testing to now going across with multiple different languages and so forth? Can you kind of, what's your take on that?
Sure. So with the way that it started, like it was starting with the English speaking market was very easy for us just because, again, all of us, it's very, very natural. But once you start optimizing things for the Japanese market or Portuguese market, again, focusing specifically in Brazil or focusing specifically in France, like, well, okay, well, how do you actually want to be positioned the different products? So the products, you can say that they're identical. You know, whoever uses Google Maps can use it in any country in the world. Having said that, the usage metrics are different for different markets. And the way that users are actually looking on the solutions, the competitors a lot of times are different from market to market, because sometimes you have an app that is dominating and you have other markets that, you know, they have 80% of the market share already. So it really depends on each and every market and what is the unique selling proposition that you want to celebrate based on the usage. So the way that users are basically using different products of Google is not identical, even though they do a lot of different things. And I feel like where we started with them, we had a lot of best practices about how it was when we worked with a lot of startups. And for startups, it's very easy to come up with a new hypothesis. Let's test it out. Let's create new sets of screenshots, preview video, icon, whatever you want. Put it live in the App Store and Google Play Store. A/B testing it, seeing if it works better, fantastic. If it doesn't work well, kill it and move to another idea or things of that nature. With Google, 90% statistical significance wasn't enough. They needed 99% statistical significance to make each and every one of the decisions on the A/B testing. If this is an actual, like almost 100% that it will win once you actually scale it up, because doing a mistake for apps on that scale is very scary. And the same thing goes for the creative side. Like when we're working with startup, it's very easy to come up with new hypotheses and testing a few different directions that make sense. You saw what the biggest competitors have done. You're looking on the different trends on the niche for the last 2 to 3 years. You're coming up with your own hypothesis. You are bringing on the brief about what are the unique selling proposition and create whatever type of image, video, screenshots, things of that nature. And with client on that side, size, we kind of needed to adopt a lot of those things, because getting something approved by those beasts, like so big, you need like sometimes 13 decision makers to give you an approval of stamp to say, yeah, okay, so the product team likes it, the branding team is okay with it, the legal team is, but it's okay, like we can pass that. The local team specifically that is in charge of Brazil actually thinks that we should actually go with these type of things. We need to change the hair of that specific person over there, making it a bit lighter so it will look like a lot of very, very specific things that each and every market kind of about the audience. Lots more revisions that we usually have. And we needed to kind of structure this type of a process specifically for them on about how many decision makers and what happens when you're going through all of the different decision makers, getting approvals from 12 out of the 13, and then I'm just showing it to the VP, and the VP wasn't involved in the first concept. So he doesn't know that the first two screens need to be connected or not connected or tilted devices or things. Like a lot of the best practices that we went with the more junior team, and they it made sense for everyone, and we showed them the proof of why we are doing it in this way and not on that way. And then when it comes to a VP, the VP said, I love it as much. And he doesn't know everything that we've gone through, like with 6 revisions rounds, in order to get to a place where everyone else are happy with it and still be with best practices on the apps on Google Play. So a lot of those key learnings about, okay, how do we get them involved from the get? And a lot of learnings about how to work with an organization at that size. Also knowing a lot about the limitations about what we can or cannot do, what we are not allowed to do. So obviously it's a learning progress, but you know, after working with them for 5.5 years, lots of things, magical things happen because of this this relationship. We also grew as a company because we needed to start knowing, okay, how do we deal with startups we know, mid-sized companies. Again, we had a lot of those. Enterprises is another beast, but Fortune 10 companies, it's a different type of a beast. So how do we work with them efficiently, and what's more important for them, and what are the things that you have to stay away from, and you know, even just buying insurances and things like nature to be compliant with the procurement team and things like nature, it was a lot.
I can imagine, man, because there's so much, I'm sure you have to go through so many different, you're dealing with so many different markets. Now, on top of you as the owner, you have to deal with the cultural differences. You have to look at how, you know, the users and so forth work in regards to different markets, like you said, on compliance and, you know, how you handle the data for that. So I'm sure that gets into the, you know, there's so much that you have for, so glad, like for you going through this and you having to kind of work through, as your point across, like bringing it forward to the VP and so forth. What do you think that the key things that you've learned just on that leadership level that, you would probably give back to others that are in startups, that are in other pieces? What would you say that you've learned?
A lot. I think that each and every organization is different. Even if you work with like 5 or 10 big clients, and the 11th client can kind of demand you to do things in a very different way, especially on the service business where things are not just like, but this is how the code is written, but you can modify anything that you need in order to actually suit their needs. I feel like part of the things that we needed to learn and adapt was whether it was the process, the approval process, getting things through like different stakeholders within the company that will help you push that specific direction that you really believe in. We had a lot of challenges initially where you needed to think about the scale of it, because working with 2 projects or 3 projects, like 3 different product marketing managers and product managers and like all of the team that basically are working with on each and every product. And then they have the centralized growth team that is a different entity, and each of them has their own KPI for the quarter and different priorities for the quarter. So sometimes the priorities, if they are not fully aligned, one team actually really wants to push for innovative things. Okay, let's test 2 preview videos, one after the other, 1 portrait, 1 landscape to see how it works, because it's a cool thing and not a lot of people are doing it. And the other growth team actually doesn't want to push it on the innovation side. They care about the conversion rate. They care purely about the numbers of the so a lot of the different tests and contradictions between wishes and KPIs, and I won't say stiff, but it's like an organization that is as performance oriented as them. You need to hit very, very hard quarterly KPIs to stay relevant, to show that you actually managed to do the thing that they got you to do with. So even how you're structuring tests, a lot of times you're coming up, and when you're working with the creative team, they're coming to you, hey, this is a really cool way. They're actually writing it in a different flow, and let's try to do this type of a thing that looks awesome, and it will look different than anyone else. And you're saying, yeah, but it's much more dangerous. And if this test will actually fail with this specific app that has to meet that specific KPI by the end of Q3, that can really screw up the marketing team. So maybe on this specific app, let's take lower risk on that specific verticals. And on those places, let's go crazier. So even understanding the priorities, a lot of times, you know, you're running by creative juices and you have ideas and you have concepts, you have hypotheses. And you saw something that was looking super cool and no one done it before. And at the end of the day, what is the level of risk that you're willing to take with each and every product? And what is the appetite for risk? Like, you see that some of them are very strict about the brand guidelines. That's the only thing you can do or you cannot do. And others are saying, let's test it out. I don't mind about it too much. I just want to find the best growth levers. And they're allowing you, just for example, to say the app, let's say YouTube, for example, will be YouTube dash watch listen, and all of those are verbs that will help you to get indexed for more keywords that are related with like watch videos, stream clips, or stream music, and all of those things. So the title and the subtitle were structured very performance oriented, while other apps saying, well, we are just Google search. We are search. That's that. You cannot say anything beyond the fact that, like, you cannot describe search in a different path. So product has its own appetite about how aggressive they want to be, how branded they want to be, and how to basically tell the story based on title, subtitle, show description, screenshots, preview video, icon. You have lots of things that you can potentially play with, but you have lots of different restrictions based on what is the level of appetite of that team to help them to get ranked for more keywords and convert on a higher ratio in the apps on Google Play Store. So it was a very interesting kind of doctrine of learning best practices to be a really product and not just for, you know, the apps on Google Play Store with the way that we're working with startups or with other companies. And you always have this type of, you have a trend line where you can say, I'm all in on performance or I'm all in on the branded side. And you can say, I'm just clean and I'm just showing what the product does, and I'm not trying to tell any unique story about it. Everyone knows who Walmart is, everyone knows who Amazon is, and let's just be Amazon. And then you can see other companies that are competing against them saying, buy everything, buy and sell anything, or things of that nature that are much more aggressive about the type of keywords and phrases that they want to get ranked for, and that are willing to make it look like a bit dirtier to impact the algorithm in a different way. So you have this type of ratchet between 1 to 10 about how aggressive are you going after the branding side or the performance side, because usually it doesn't work in the same way where you only have 30 characters to describe what the app does. What is the name of the app? Or 30 characters for the subtitle, exactly the same. Like, you can only say one thing there. Like, it could be like Robinhood trade no fees, or it could be trade Bitcoin, ETFs, stocks, every single thing that you, in order to actually show the algorithm that I'm the best in stocks, I'm the best in trading and things of that nature. So how you actually position the title and subtitle is another thing that is like very different than how you're putting the screenshots, how you're telling the story on the icon itself. Do you have the name of the app or not within the icon? If you're writing the name of it or not, there are lots of best practices and lots of different things that you can do with like bigger or smaller organization and how brand safe or how performance oriented they are.
And I think that it depends, like you said, on terms of if it's an enterprise space, they're going to have a lot more stricter governance and so forth. And then I think that comes into, you know, that consulting side that you and Moberst do, even within our realm of like cloud consulting, and everybody wants to now with AI, everybody wants to get in with the biggest point and they want to implement all the features, but that's the really on asking the right questions. And it sounds like what you're getting around to is fair to say, like really asking what's needed, what's really the pain points, and then how do we adjust for that? Whether it is for branding, okay, let's focus on that and break it down into iteratives. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's completely spot on. It's something that each and every brand, the first things that we are doing is like really trying to understand what's going to be considered a success in 6 months from now. We need now to draft what will be in the presentation that we're going to be presenting to the board or to the management of how those 6 months were. What do we want to see there? What are the... And then let's reverse engineer that. Okay, we need to hit at least X percent of growth. We need to hit that specific percent of conversion rate. We need to actually hit that specific milestone. And then how do we reverse engineer that into a plan of what are the smaller tests or iterations or processes that you need to go in order to hit that specific KPI that you need?
I think that is like the key points of like really walking through and being that, it seems like what you're doing is really being that partner rather than that vendor, really showcasing, walking it through with your clients on that. And, you know, I kind of want to bring up, ask you with everything that's now digitally transformed, right? You know, you guys have, you know, I've looked through on the history that you acquired, you know, KitCaster, you've gone through, you've made a lot of expansion, right, with Moberst. Do you feel that, how do you manage with C-suite or with leadership with there's so many options and technology, you know, kind of, I'm forgetting the term, but really the shiny toy. How do you manage the expectation, but how do you figure out which technology is best for companies and so forth as to help drive that next stage? Does that make sense of the question?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I think that basically we expanded our toolkit. I have like lots of different things that I can use. But the biggest question is not what I have to sell. The fact that I have 28 business lines and I might have 35 by the end of this year. Great. The only question is not what I have to offer. And I'm not trying to sell anyone on any service. I'm trying to see what do you need? What is the missing part? What are the things that are not quite there yet? And then, okay, great. I have here something. Okay, the website is underperforming. Then we have the team that can actually rebuild the website or build landing pages or create a different system that they will work on or can actually create a different layout or creating an app that will make much more sense because most of the users are using it on the mobile side. And it's like a consistent user that is actually, you're expecting them to use it twice a day. So it's a tool and it might be much more convenient to have it on the pocket compared to something that, hey, this is something that looks fantastic and the only thing that you need is more traffic, then okay, how we would be getting you more traffic. So we can go with influencer marketing or Facebook ads, Google ads, Snapchat, Pinterest, Quora, ad networks, RTBs, exchanges. You can go with CV. You can go with on the organic side. Let's get you ranked on more keywords and phrases. We can get you ranked on ChatGPT, Gemini, Perplexity, and Claude. Like each of those is like a different avenue. But I also know on the back of my head, what is the expected outcome of this type of actions based on different niches, based on timeline. If you need tomorrow morning to drive another 10,000 users, you need paid ads. If you now need to build the foundation to get them to, on the organic side, they want to lower the cost per acquisition, they need more traffic, we need to actually establish much better organic structure where Google and Bing will give them much more traffic on the day-to-day basis. And later on, ChatGPT, Gemini, Perplexity, and Claude, on all of the LLMs that will also give them more traffic and more citations. So then we need to build the foundation in a different way about how to get them ranked higher on the organic side so they won't going to need to pay for every single click on Google Ads or on Meta Ads or things of that nature. So it's a different methodology methodology based on, by when do we need to hit that KPI? What is the maximum money that we have in order to achieve that specific goal? And then how success would actually looks like. And for different kind of processes or different type of challenges, you have lots of different type of solutions that you can bring into life. And like I had a client that reached out to me, I think it was around 2 weeks ago. I'm launching a new dating app. I talked to another founder here. He also launched something that was super successful, and they just raised the $10 million the A round, and they're managing everything through influencers. So I want to do influencer marketing. And I told him, my friend, you want to do influencer marketing, but influencer marketing, the biggest problem with that, I have that service. Like, if you want to buy that service, I have it. I can sell it to you, so to speak. I'll show you why we're doing the best influencer marketing in the world. But every single influencer that you're looking on the analytics, around 90 to 95% of the followers are not from the same state. Most of them are scattered all around the 50 states in the US, and sometimes even in the UK, in Australia, in Canada, other countries. So if you want to now promote a dating app, and a dating app, the unique thing about it is you need enough males enough females in the same proximity. So if I get now to a new dating app and I have no one to swipe around me, and the next user is in Vegas in Wisconsin, even if they look fantastic and I want to swipe right to them, I will never meet them. It will not give me any value. So the unique thing about dating is that you need to have enough males and females in the same proximity of a level of city, and sometimes all the way to the level of a zip code, in order to have enough users to give value to your users. And if you are doing something like spray and pray, like influencers, where most of the followers that will see the content that producer just produced, even if they have 1 million followers, but only 50,000 will be around, let's say, New York City area, but 95% of them, 950,000, will get scattered downloads from all around the US, and you're getting 2 downloads from here, 5 downloads over there, 6 downloads over there, no one will get a good experience. You're using the wrong methodology. So I understand that a friend of yours have launched a different vertical in a different niche. For them, it might make sense. For you, at this stage, it doesn't. So a lot of times, they're asking the wrong questions, or they're asking you something that they saw that a friend of theirs or a colleague of theirs have done, but this is the wrong use of methodology. And a lot of times, it's a lot of education, because I don't want to sell them on that service. They're happy to buy it. And in 3 months, they will say, hey, it didn't work for us. And yeah, we could have focused that from the get-go, but we just wanted to roll with you and give you what you asked for. And that's something that we just don't want to do. So on our sales process or growth strategy process, we are very much leaning into what is the KPI, what do we need to hit, and then by when do we need to hit it, and then reverse engineer that into the methodologies that we need to use in order to have the higher success rate for those companies.
And I love, and you and me on the same page, but I really liked how you kind of broke that down, Gilad, because you had the service for him, for the influencer side. But I think that's what kind of really differentiates, is just on us saying, hey, let's slow down. We can get there, but that business model might not work for you. You know, let's really look into it. And I really feel like that's us going through the approach of like what separates, you know, from that partner and that vendor. Because even when you were thinking through of the dating apps, I'm from the infrastructure side on cloud. So I'm thinking, okay, how does your networking? You have to deal with different types of networks from the different regions. You have to think of storage, handling those profiles for that, you know, and then scaling of the side of how many users come in and break that down. So it just is so crucial, you know, as us being for clients, for our partners, it's really driving that piece of really how can we better help them to get to that next goal. And it might not be what they thought. We have to kind of really gently guide and say, hey, I hear what you're going through, but this avenue might be approaching. That's where the consulting comes in. So do you feel like in nowadays, especially with AI, do you feel like too much technology is driving more rather than the business is driving the technology?
That's a great question. I think that because of the verge of AI, I feel like how hard it is to build a new product, it becomes much easier. Oh yeah, I can build it in Lovable. I can build it in Base 44. You know what? It's not a problem whatsoever. I'll Claude code and it code everything for me. And then you were saying, okay, great. Again, I didn't know how they were developing it, but they are saying the product is ready. Let's start launching it. And you start launching it and you start getting users in, and the server collapse, and they don't know how to actually build the right type of architecture for the servers, or they don't necessarily know how to actually fix a specific problem that occurred. Users are coming in, basically are getting into a broken type of a flow because of like a lot of users starting to upload images. Some of those images are massive, and then it starts to make everything so slow when it loads, and because of that, everything is laggy, and they didn't experience it before because, again, they didn't mention that specifically on the prompt that they wrote to Claude Code or things like that. They didn't know what they don't know. So they just asked, hey, build me this product. And here you go. You have this product and you're playing with it. Hey, it's cool. It looks like it works. Let's start running it with it with marketing. So I feel like you do have much more entrepreneurs nowadays that feel like I have the ability. The technology is much more approachable. It doesn't need to cost me $300,000 of a company that will actually waste now 6 to 12 months to build me this type of a beast. Let's just roll with it. And you do see much more premature products that are coming to the market where they didn't necessarily think about elementary things that are not necessarily fully baked just yet. So I think that on one end, you do have the opportunity of building and prototyping and things on that nature that are very easy. But on the other side, to actually build something sustainable, you do need help. You do need experts. You do need, just like you can open a company probably by yourself in most of the states, but you will probably use a lawyer and he will avoid you to hit a few different walls. And the same thing goes for the CPA. Like when your taxes are very easy, that's one thing. When you start actually saying, hey, I have employees in different locations, you need to know what you're doing to make sure that you're not falling through the cracks on many things. So I feel like marketing and also the development side is very similar to that. You have great guidance by, again, ask Gemini, ask Claude. Like you have those experts, but you also need to verify that this is fitting for your specific situation with your specific criteria and the things that really matter the most for you when you think about how to manage it, how to scale that, how elastic that system is for changes and many, many other things that are really crucial for a long-term success.
Yeah, I think it all comes down to, because, you know, it's such a useful tool that we have with these LLMs, but it takes away the context, that experience that the consultant, like as you said, the lawyer or from the marketing, from the growth strategy on what specifically that you may need from that. And I think at least from what I've seen and so forth, even with clients, it gets into, we have to race, we have to get there. And so there's not asking those fundamental steps. So with that, for partners that are coming through, because we're really seeing this massive digital transformation, what would you advise? Like where do you start from the foundation? What questions should be asked before implementing to get to that? A startup getting to the next level and they want to implement, of course, AI. Like, what are the questions that you would recommend? Because obviously you've gotten through a lot of success. What if, from experience, what thought leadership things would you bring up to ask?
So I think it's really different from different verticals. When you think about B2B and B2C is not the same, obviously. And you want to understand how you start building the core foundation, like a minimum viable product, something that will actually be usable enough. We're going to have all of the bells and whistles, all of the different things that you might want, but something that is good enough to like show the hypothesis. Basically, you want to start with like two things. A, does anyone has that problem that I thought that they have? And B, is my product with the way that I'm trying to solve it, solve that pain? So number one, if you know, just for example, that my pain point right now, for example, I think that people actually need to be meditating more because it's not as, and let's create a meditation app. Okay, that's fine. But then will people want to use it on a day-to-day basis? Will users actually, how do you change the behavior? How do you do the market education for them to continue understanding that this is not something that you're doing once? You actually need to do that every day or twice a day, every time to do that for at least 15 minutes or 10 minutes. Again, whatever that best practice that you think that is. How do you create that type of a minimum viable product where you're giving them enough to test the hypothesis without building now a massive tank with like 5,000 features and the core base of what you wanted to say, yeah, they will use it every day because of 1, 2, 3. And you're saying, hey, you know what? They're actually using it only once a month. And I have so many features that now it's super confusing for them. They don't even know what to tap on because each of them takes them to a completely different experience because I had so many ideas for features and concepts and things of that nature. So I think that the two core elements that you always need to ask yourself is one, what is the problem that you're trying to solve? And two, is the solution that I crafted actually solving it in a good enough way? And if it is, then okay, add more features, optimize, start doing different things on like adding more of those supporting layers. But the base of any startup, I feel like, is like finding a problem for a solution that enough people care about it and they're willing to embrace that solution from, again, the payment side, like the value side of what they are getting compared to what they need to pay in order to actually do that. And sometimes the payment is just like actually going, doing 10 minutes every single day we do of meditation. That's the pay. It could be for completely free, but did you managed to forge a habit that later on will make your app like something that no one will be able to think about starting the day without your app, because this is the first thing that they're doing in the morning. So these are the two fundamentals that I feel like if you are following, it will guide you toward, is it a nice to have? Is it a must have? And then if it's a must have, then obviously build it. If it's not, let's do that in the second quarter and focus first on, does it actually solve a problem that someone actually cares about?
Right. And I think you kind of brought on, it's just, again, it goes back to that main pain point that you're trying to solve. And then, as you said, once you get to, you finish that, how can you automate that? And then once that becomes automated, we can move on to the next step of that. I think that's key. You know, with it, Gilad, like with, you know, because Moburst has been acquiring, I know in last year or 2 years ago, you did the PR of having a firm from Uproar and so forth. So what is the next step? What is your vision for Moburst in the next year with a lot of LLM, with Claude, you know, with, it's constantly evolving and evolving with these new LLMs. How are you staying on top of, and like, what is your definition of success for the next year for the company?
Yeah, fantastic question. So I have to say, I don't have all of the answers for that. We are in the process right now of buying additional two companies. So we bought the PR, we bought the podcasting arm. We are planning, like, this was our fifth acquisition. We will probably be doing another two in the next 6 months or so. And the goal is to be one-stop shop for our clients. Now, with each and every one of those acquisitions, we're adding more tools in our tool set. And on top of that, we are adding more active clients that are being served on those specific niches. So if now we are buying an Amazon shop and they're only doing Amazon, then we can help them on anything that is non-Amazon. And then we can upsell and cross-sell for our clients that are actually not doing Amazon with us, because we are not, we don't have that level of capabilities just yet. Like we feel like what we're doing the best of what it can be done. But other things we're saying, hey, you know what? This is not our area of expertise. Just go to another vendor. We don't want to take on a project that will not be successful. So adding more capabilities is key for us. And the way that we are attracting and seeing that we are on the right path is our revenue growth. We grew 65% from last July to this March. So we're doing really, really well. It's not even a full year. And again, usually agencies growing between 15 to 20% year over year. Technology companies grow much faster than that. And that's kind of what we are seeing on our side as well. The use of AI and the way that it won't going to extinct us, but actually give us the special powers is something that we take very, very seriously. We have a VP AI with four AI people managing, like that are being managed by that VP AI, and another 16 AI champions within the teams. So that means that I have 21 people that are working on AI on a day-to-day basis. And on top of that, I have my own growth teams that are actually building things, not just for automating and creating new sets of capabilities within the service lines that we serve, but building new products, building new sets of capabilities that we don't even have today. So the AI team is in charge of, hey, we're doing social media. Let's see how we can build a tool that scouts everything that your biggest competitors are doing and giving that to us in push every single day about what are the most trendiest topics and what are the most trendiest things that your biggest competitors have done and things of that nature, and ingest that into the workflow so our content will be better. And how can we produce the content faster? And how can we create more videos out of statics? And how can we create a lot of those things that give us the edge on social media side? But then the growth team, growth labs, basically build completely different type of tools. Like, okay, this is a service that the company does not service today, but we see that as a big pain point for so many of our clients. Let's build a new set of capability, like a new SaaS tool that Moburst basically being able to provide to our clients to give them the unfair advantage, mm-hmm. their own technologies that are built from the ground up outside of the service line. So I have both of those things at the same time. It's a big investment that we are investing every single month to be ahead of the curve. To tell you that we are ahead of the curve on every single department or every single offering, I don't think that we are quite there yet. But I can tell you that the amount of products that we develop and the amount of automations that we develop is like night and day on how we are producing deliverables today compared to what we used to do in 2024, 2025. The reduction of time to produce a great piece of content or a great piece of a concept or whatever you need to do dropped very, very significantly. And the level of like the deliverables and the way that you can actually measure the impact of those deliverables, you can see that all of the KPIs related to the performance side has skyrocketed. So a lot of times, if you're saying, hey, let's do competitive analysis once every quarter, like every quarter, sitting with the VP strategy, seeing every single trend that happened in your niche, in your industry, on all of the platforms that you're running in general, and kind of combine that into what the thing that we need to do differently in the coming quarter. Now, instead of doing it on a quarterly basis, we can do that on a weekly basis, because everything is like being triggered automatically. Like no company will want to pay that much much for someone to keep on doing it every week. But if it if press of a button and a lot of subscriptions that you're already paying for, like sources of data on yearly platforms, like why not pushing it every week and seeing the trends that are changing right in front of our eyes? And after week after week, if you're seeing that the same thing actually becomes stronger or weaker, let's pivot, let's move. So a lot of those things that used to be impossible for us, and you need like, okay, yeah, we don't want to invest in that 120 hours every week. But now if it's cost us like 2 hours, why not? Basically, it's just unlocked so much more potential on so many different things to be able to provide much more value for our clients and much better results because of it.
And it does. It's really amazing just on how, just with even in the last 6 months, on how it showcased productivity truly of founding. You know, with you, I'm really curious on, I've always been curious of this, doing the acquisitions as you're bringing in more partners to bring in for, to again, to bring more value to their customers and bring more products. What does that, how does that even start with an assessment of it? Because you're bringing in different tools, you know, different, a completely different environment for acquisitioning a team. How does that work for someone outside looking in, you know, doing an assessment of if this is the right portfolio when we bring it in? How do we bring in their systems to add it into ours? Or are they just a satellite for that? Like, how does, in your mind and just from your experience of acquiring, where do you start with that? How do you make that assessment?
Yeah, for sure. So we have a person that is actually managing all of this deal flow, because we have a massive amount of agencies out there, massive amount of solution providers, and a lot of people that are putting themselves on the shelf and saying, yeah, we're now for sale. So you need to start looking under the hood and seeing what will actually make sense. It starts usually from the revenue side and the EBITDA side, like how much profit can you actually make out of this unit? And then assessing, obviously, the niche that they're at to see something that we are not serving today. If we are serving today, it's like a market share acquisition. We will be willing to pay less for that. This is something that is giving us a new set of skills that we don't have today. We are willing to pay more for that because we know that the value, if they're just, for example, when I purchased the PR arm, we didn't have any PR. We're used to launch a lot of products, but we didn't launch them with the PR. So a lot of times we say, we do everything digital besides PR. So now we can actually change the pitch and start actually bringing them with another retainer. And on top of that, all of the PR clients, we can upsell them to all of the digital services that they were not served by that agency. So starting to do it for them, media buying and creative and fixing the website and building their products and like lots of different things that they were underserved with that agency. So 1 + 1 = so much more than 2. The other part is about the cultural fit and the founder's willingness to stay. Do they want to, you know, go and drink tequila in Thailand? And that's kind of the ideal scenario. And that's okay if it is. But again, it's not what we are looking for. We don't want to just get the keys and move away from here. We actually want to build with you the next level of foundation. So we want founders that are as hungry as we are to do something amazing. With that, we want to make sure that they want to stay and they're passionate about what they do. And they might, you know, a lot of those agency owners, they are great at what they do. They could be like fantastic on the creative side, on the PR side, like they're a genius on Amazon. They know something that they know something better than anyone else. But at the same time, does that mean that they know how to manage large teams? Does that mean that they know how to manage the HR side of things and the cultural side and the financial side and the like all of the headache that goes with it and the sales and the marketing? Like once they have a lead, they know how to close it. But it used to grow each and every year by 5%, 10%. They're happy with it. It was a lifestyle business. No one is chasing them. They don't have salespeople because they want to do everything on by their own, like on the sales side and things like nature. And then they don't have the structure for HR or finance or sales or marketing. And then you're saying, like, if I'm employing those sets of capabilities or the AI capabilities, like if this is a team that didn't integrate with anything related with AI. And saying, hey, you know what? After 6 months using my own tools, using my own capabilities and my own automations, I can scale that thing much, much further because I have those things which they don't. And they never built a good looking website. So their site is kind of not ranking anything for anything. Well, if I'm building them that growth mechanism and they will start getting ranked and they will get more traffic and because of that, they will get more leads, I can unlock much more growth. So a lot of those things are being factored in when we are looking on a potential of prospect. And obviously the culturally fit, like if I need to start working with them, we're working hard at moments. Like the partner here work hard. We're working a lot of hours across so many time zones, across so many different struggles that you have on the day to day. You have days that you're opening a champagne bottle and you just want a massive new client. And at the same time, you know, the CMO of that company just changed and he is bringing with him his previous agency that was supporting him on Coca-Cola. And he doesn't give a shit about what happened in the last 4 years, that all of the awards that you managed to get to the client and all of the results. He wants a fresh start and he just came in and he got the keys to the client and that's it. And that you have like two more or three 3 more months and you're going to be getting let go. So you have the highs and you have the lows, and you want to make sure that when you're in the trenches, all of those really big peak moments for good or bad, you have there a partner that is coming to fight with you, that is coming to be with you, that is as passionate about what you guys are doing, as want to make sure that those people actually, you know, you want to be with them. If they're fun to be working with, your life, your day-to-day will be much more fun. And if it's like, you feel like already the negotiations are so intense and everything goes sideways already on the negotiations, I don't want to do business with that person. Like, it's not, we weren't going to be having fun of working together in the next 5 years. And just like, you know, your wife at the end of the day, you want to choose the right wife. You don't want to just get married. So it's something that is also important to understand the cultural fit and their hopes, their dreams, their aspirations, and seeing that it all aligns, or saying, hey, you know what? We understand what you built. You built a phenomenal business. It's just not a good fit to what we are looking for. Even if you have a lot of potential in the business collaborating and things like nature, but you feel like it's not, it could be very toxic if you are doing it with the wrong people.
I can just tell from you explaining that you had so much experience from learning from this. I could just tell there's so many deeper questions that you don't think of that goes involved. And really, it sounds like it's real true, like enterprise architecture, that you have to look at change management. You have to look at the different business units that come in instead of just the profit and loss and just on the EBITDA. Like, you have to really look at the environment, as you said, the culture, how do things work, and how do you help grow that? How does this fit into the piece? So I could just see that is had a lot to work with.
Yeah, we've gone through lots of those processes. I'm very proud to say that I made every single mistake in the book. Like, no one taught me initially. I never thought that I would be doing the same thing 13 years after I opened the company, that I still be working in this company. But I feel like the good thing is that we are learning extremely fast from, you know, pivoting really fast when things are going south. And we try to get a lot of data indicators in front of us to say, well, there is a red flag in here. We should actually inspect that much deeper. And then if we see that red flag is not being solved, like, okay, we need to change the process, the team, the people, like something to make it like not going back to the drawing board and basically fixing the things that are broken. So we've made a lot of mistakes. We also made a lot of very good decisions as part of that. And we're always trying to analyze, for good or bad, what was working, what was not working, what can we learn out of that for the next one to be better and faster and more smoother. And integrations, you know, when you acquire a team and they're working on Monday and we are on Asana and they're working with Outlook and we are working with Gmail, like with the consolidation of all of those systems, and they have HubSpot, but it's a different subscription and they just renewed theirs, and I will have two different systems and two different, and everything is like more complex. You can design everything to be perfect fit, but you can definitely mitigate the things that are more painful and create a plan of how we are solving the things that matter the most for us at the end of the day.
Yeah, no, those are the most important things, right, of having to go through for that. You know, Gilad, like with the key point I always ask folks that are kind of coming in with AI, with the emergence of it, is how fast it's continuously evolving and so forth. If you had that magic wand to have it to where, if you thought of it as ChatGPT 12 or, you know, in the next years, what would you want it to, that pain point that you would like to solve, whether it's in your personal life or on the business side that you'd like to have?
It's a great question. I think that like getting a system that will ask the questions that I'm not thinking about. Like, we have so many systems that are integrated today. We're working on so many different platforms. We have Metric AI to manage the time that is being invested for each and every project. We have Google, where you're seeing like Gmail to actually manage all of the emails and things like that. We have Slack channels. We have Asana boards. Like, we have so many different pieces of the puzzle. We have HubSpot for the CRM. Like, we have lots of different systems that are actually being integrated. And I feel like a lot of times you can ask the VP, and that's usually, you know, on a C-level executive, usually you're asking the next level and asking questions. What is not working? What is not necessarily is working in the best possible way? What are the things that they need more support on, or things like nature? And I feel like a lot of times I don't know even what type of questions to ask necessarily, where it's scattered on so many different systems. And theoretically, there could be like a system that sits above all of it, digesting everything that happens on the organization and bring you the red flag for, you agreed on the management call that within a week and a half, you'll have this and this and that, and it's not being integrated in those specific teams at this space. And because of that, you will be missing these type of, like, you can create very specific toggling system of, I don't want to spend more than 110% of the time that we were focusing on a project, and then I'll get a red flag about that. Like, that's very easy to do. But knowing that there are things that are stuck now in the third round of revisions that make us lose these specific APIs that might actually delay another launch that will impact 2 weeks from now, that's something that is still a human usually need to ask and kind of look on 3 steps ahead. And I feel like if there was a system that kind of sits above everything and can bubble you those insights, that could be super useful for a C-level executive that a lot of times seeing what their executives are telling them and what their team basically are sharing. But a lot of times you can't see the full picture. So I do feel like at some point you'll have this type of a macro system with like insights that, hey, dear CEO, these are the 3 things that you really want to attend today. Whether you planned it or not, you want to attend them.
You know, with that, you know, because we want that consultant level of that AI to ask those right questions. From your experience, from, you know, if you would give the one thing that you would give for the advice to another CEO for another C-suite that's looking to grow their business, maybe to that next stage, right, of that mid-size, what's one question, like based off of that consultant, that they should ask themselves, or what advice that you would give of that, you would say?
I think that I would look on the data architecture of the organization. I feel like most of the times you want to do crazy things and you're saying, hey, but I have all of those emails and all those call recordings and things like nature, but the data is not structured in any way that you can actually start processing it on a big level. And once you want to utilize that, you're saying that, okay, just now tagging the data and tagging it based on the clients, based on the case study, based on the different things, it will take me now forever. So if you are thinking about how to build the next level of foundation and you know that AI is going to be a very big driver of business today, how are you structuring your data from every single meeting that happened to be stored in a place and tagged in a specific way, even if you don't know exactly what to do with that tomorrow morning, because you don't have the algorithm that will start mapping it. Like, you need to start thinking about the data in order to make sure that you are kind of being able to build later on the foundation of that consulting theme on top of it, to be able to ask questions to that data and getting answers based on your own data to understand, hey, you know what? I had that case 6 months ago, 12 months ago. It was with another team member. I don't even remember the name of the client, but now let's go back to Google Drive and start sorting things. No, if you're tagging them from the get-go, this is this type of a client and they're doing these things, and you have like a brief document about that thing that is on the folder. Now AI can kind of come up and pick up and basically read through 600 documents and call you like that, the right answer, rather than you starting to go back in time and trying to understand, yeah, they were also penalized by Google and lost 95% of the traffic, and this was also happening them after this change, and how much time does it take them to recover from that. Like, you can build those benchmarks based on your own data if you just mark the data right.
Right. It's that meta, it's that data of having it within to make it go through. No, I really loved this conversation, Gil. Like, you know, I know we're close to the time and so forth, but like, for those that really want to learn more about MoreBurst, or more just on your journey and as it continues to grow, where can they learn more? Like, if I was a startup or another company that wanted to look into the services that you provide, where can we learn to find more?
Yeah, the easiest way is probably our website, www.moburst.com, MoBurst.com, or just find me on LinkedIn, Gilad Bashar on LinkedIn. And again, would love to pick your brain and kind of help with whatever I can to help you to unleash your growth goals.
That's perfect. For the audience, you know, thanks for tuning in. We're going to have all of Gilad's and MoBurst information down into the description, so you can click through, learn more about what they have to offer, see if it's beneficial for you. So Gilad, thanks again, man, for coming on. I'm really excited just on how you guys have really grown and how the next steps on these acquiring to, you know, bring in these new, hopefully of your new partners, and just what you've done, you know, because it's really expounding, like have you said, from the podcast side, from the video, and, you know, bringing forward now from the PR. It's really showcasing of thinking forward, like what can we do to bring more value and get to that next stage. So thanks for coming on to the show.
Of course. Thank you for having me. Have a good one.
Perfect. Guys, thanks for tuning in to the AI Advantage. We'll catch you on the next episode. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to the AI Advantage. If this episode sparked an idea, share it with your network. Subscribe for more No Fluff conversations on how smart tech drives real outcomes. And if you're ready to future-proof your business, let's connect at solonox.net.